This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Set Lusting Bruce, your podcast all about Bruce Springsteen, his music, and mostly his fans. I am your host, Jesse Jackson. We are getting off the Bruce train, though I'm sure he will come up, as he often does. I'm talking to my new friend, Clint. We're talking a little bit of everything. So, Clint, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Well, I would love to talk about Bruce, because Bruce is one of my first loves. And I've seen him all over the world. I saw him at No Nukes in New York City at Madison Square Garden. I saw him at JFK Stadium in London on July 4th when I was 19 years old. So that was a long time ago.
Wow.
And it's been really interesting because the way I got into the No Nukes concert was part of what I really want to talk about here, because what this is really about is about, like, people ask me, like, how do you get into what you do? What I do is I help people to be special in the eyes of other people. That's what I do. And all of this began back in those days because, see, what happened was I went to the Who concert when I was 13. So that would be 1978. I bought tickets through the mail, and I got 13th row center, or no, I got 8th row center through the mail.
That's awesome. And
yeah. So I got 4 tickets, 8th row center, and I'm going to turn off the blur. There we go.
Okay.
That's going to be much better.
Okay.
And so I went with my cousin and my good friend, Andy Gawker, and my cousin's boyfriend. And on the way into the show, music changes your whole life.
Yeah. Right?
On the way into Madison Square Garden, I'm wearing Smith's jeans. And those were jeans that had a little snap on the back pocket. And I'm like,
okay,
I have my ticket in my back pocket, and I'm snapping it closed, and somebody snatches my ticket out of my hand. And I turn around, and I see some guy just disappearing into the crowd outside of Madison Square Garden. So we go to the police. Somebody stole the ticket, and he snatched it out of my hand. Who was it? Who was it? I don't know. He's gone. So the cop walks us all the way up to the turnstiles. We had the other 3 tickets in a row.
Yeah.
And he gets us in through the turnstile.
Wow.
So now I'm in Madison Square Garden. But I couldn't get down to the floor where my tickets were. So what happened? My cousin and her boyfriend and my friend, they all went to the seats. And then my cousin's boyfriend comes back with my cousin's ticket. And
yeah,
hands it to me, and we just go in, and there we are.
Okay, there you go. Problem solved.
Okay, so in high school, that became legendary, and everybody started doing that. Oh, my ticket got snatched. Somebody snatched my ticket. We were in New York City. Of course, we were, like, scamming. Everybody's scamming to get ahead, right? Girls were doing this to get into – I know 2 girls who did this to get into – the movie premiere of Beverly Hills Cop in New York City.
Okay. All right.
That all has to do, and ultimately I said, I got in to see Bruce Springsteen at No Nukes exactly that way. Tickets got snatched.
So you did not mind scamming. Okay.
Hey, look, this all comes down to a sense of, you think you're good enough to get in, right? You think you can do stuff. Okay, so now we fast forward all these decades into my adult life. And get an email. I'm on vacation at the Royal Hawaiian Hotel with my wife. The first year we went for 30 days. The first year we went on a vacation in February for Valentine's Day. We had such a beautiful time there for 10 days at the Royal Hawaiian Hotel. My wife goes, I wish we could come back here sometime for a whole month. So I made a deal with one of my clients who was cash poor, but points rich with Starwood points.
Yeah.
And I traded her some high level coaching that she wanted for enough points to give us a whole month at the Royal Hawaiian Hotel. And that was the first year. The second year, it wasn't enough. So we went back for 40 nights. The third year, we went back for 50 nights. The fourth year, we went back for 60 nights. And it was either the third or the fourth year, I get an email from a charity. And it says, hey, if you donate $25,000 to the Rolling Stones' favorite charity, us, the Rolling Stones will have you as their special guests at their concert in Arnhem, Netherlands. You'll be a VIP at the concert. You'll get to meet the band. You go to the VIP party before, you hang out with the band, you get pictures with the band, talk to them. And I show it to my wife and I'm like, wow, that would be amazing. But $25,000, that's crazy. You got to understand, after I graduated from college, I chased the Hollywood dream for 13 years. Six plus of those years, I was a taxi driver, surviving on $500 a week. And I had to pay $482 of those dollars every month for child support, which I did for 17 years happily. Actually, at the end of it, I paid a lot more child support. But
yeah,
the case is, for me to be able to donate $25,000 or even contemplate donating $25,000 was a huge transformation for me. But even still, I said to my wife, wow, wouldn't it be amazing to have this once in a lifetime opportunity? But $25,000 is crazy. And she's like, yeah, that's crazy. The next day I get another email from the same charity. Hey, if you donate to us the $25,000, you could be the VIP guest of the Rolling Stones. And just on a whim, I clicked the button. And my iPhone auto-populated all the fields. And then it just said, just click here to confirm your order. And I did. And boom, it went on my American Express card. And I said to my wife, hey, Allie, guess what? What? You're going to go be a VIP guest at the Rolling Stones concert and meet Mick Jagger and get a picture with him. She goes, you did not spend $25,000 on that. I'm like, yes, I did. Hey, it's for a charity. What's money for if you can't have once in a lifetime opportunities?
Yeah.
And this is a different form of feeling like I could never have done that if I didn't feel like I deserved it. I deserve to get into the No Nukes concert for free.
Okay.
I deserved to go to the Rolling Stones. And so off we go. And here's the thing is that I didn't even check like flights. I just knew I wanted it. That's all I knew. And turns out I had to be, I'm a speaker. I teach authors, speakers, coaches, advisors, consultants. I had a speech I had to make for some financial advisors at this thing called the $1 Million Roundtable in California, 5 days after that Rolling Stones concert was scheduled. So I start checking flights, and it turns out that 2 one-way tickets from Amsterdam to California were going to be $9,000. Now, I'm already in for 25. Another nine doesn't sound like a good idea. Isn't there some other cheaper way? So I do this, on a whim, I'm on Expedia searching. And instead of searching for the fastest flight, I said, well, what if I take the slowest flight? What would that be like? And it turns out the slowest flight is a flight on Aeroflot Airlines. And it has an 18-hour stopover in Moscow. And for two of us, it was $550. For two of us. So I booked the Aeroflot ticket. I'm like, wow, we're going to get to go to Moscow. Whoever thought I would ever go to Moscow? Not me.
Sure.
But I want to go. I want to go check it out. So luckily, I talked to my friend who hires a lot of Russian computer programmers to do programming for his company. He goes, you better get on your visa. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, if you want to leave the airport and go into Moscow for the night, you have to have a visa. So luckily I read the fine print and I noticed that your visa, your passport must be valid at least 6 months after your entry into Russia, or else your visa will be denied. And of course, my passport is going to expire 5 months and 3 weeks before I'm going to be leaving. So I had to get a new passport, a visa, everything taken care of in 3 weeks. This is pre-pandemic. This is October 2018. So we could do things faster in those days. I got my visa. I got my new passport. I booked us hotels on points. I booked the nicest hotel in Moscow on points. We go to the Rolling Stones and said to Mick Jagger, I said, Sir Mick, what's the most important thing you ever learned? He said, you can't always get what you want, but if you try, sometimes you find you get what you need. Now, it's just a line from his song, but he wrote the song. And it's one of the greatest rock and roll songs of all time. And a lot of people, like, they probably came here to hear about Bruce Springsteen. And I hope I satisfied that Bruce itch. But for anybody who's an author, a speaker, a coach, an expert, an entrepreneur, anybody who sells what you do or know to help people, what you need is to do the things that I do to make myself seem special in the eyes of clients and prospects. Because that photo of us with the Rolling Stones, like, that's been such a powerful piece of marketing for my career.
Yeah.
And even the stories about the trip have been amazing stories. I tell these stories a lot. I wrote about it in my book, which was nominated for the Pulitzer Prize, which was called Wisdom of the Men. Here's us with the Rolling Stones, by the way.
Nice. All right, send me that. That's going to be the photo I cut when I post the podcast. So, all right. So, obviously, listeners, we're going to have a fun time. But Clint.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I am already just in love with you. So tell me, talk to me your origin story. Where did you grow up and what kind of music were you listening to? What were your family listening to?
Hey, man, I grew up on the 18th floor of an apartment building on 23rd Street and 2nd Avenue. And my first album that I bought was Barry Manilow, I Write the Songs. And my second album I bought was Led Zeppelin.
Okay.
Stairway to Heaven.
Yes.
The first concert I ever went to was Neil Young, Russ Never Sleeps. Somebody gave me a ticket as a present for my 13th birthday. And I went with that same guy, Andy Gawker, and another guy, Mike Beanstock. And then the first concert I ever went to on a date, I took Jenny Tusek on a date to see Yes at Madison Square Garden. And I saw the Allman Brothers Band at the Palladium on 14th Street in New York City in high school. I saw Muddy Waters in the 18th row of the Beacon Theater of the orchestra when I was 17 years old. I saw B.B. King live in Central Park. I've been to the Preservation Hall innumerable times. My mom always took us to opera when we were little kids, and I never liked it because she always bought nosebleed seats.
Yeah.
But when I got older, I discovered opera. And really, my favorite thing, I still go to, look, that Rolling Stones concert in Arnhem was amazing, was absolutely amazing. We were in the first row of the pit. And it's not that much fun to stand for all that many hours. But but it was an amazing show, and I've seen them twice. But these days, the music I like to see live, really, I do mariachi music. Now I live in Mexico. If you, like, by this wall, maybe okay. You can tell I live in Mexico. I like mariachi music at a restaurant on the beach. But what I really like to do is opera, man. I just freaking love opera. And I'll tell you a funny story about opera. My favorite opera, I got two funny stories of opera, and they both tie in here. My favorite opera is Tosca. Tosca is an opera about this woman, Tosca, and she's in love with this guy who's a painter, but the governor of the state, he wants her. And he says, he arrests the painter who she's in love with and having an affair with. And he says, look, unless you sleep with me, I'm going to kill him. And I'm going to have him executed in the morning. So she agrees to allegedly sleep with him. But at the moment of culminating the deed, she kills him. And that's as much as I'm going to tell you about this opera. It becomes even more tragic from there. I get tickets for me and my wife to go see Tosca at the Metropolitan Opera House on New Year's Eve of 2017.
Okay.
And Donald Trump had just won the election.
Yes.
And a couple months earlier, my daughter graduated from USC Film School, the one I was paying the alimony, the child support for all those years when I was a taxi driver.
Right.
And she graduated from USC Film School, and we go to the graduation, and the announcer comes over the PA system. Ladies and gentlemen, the University of Southern California is proud to announce, this is May of 2017, that in attendance at today's commencement exercise is the true president of the United States, Hillary Rodham Clinton. And the crowd goes wild because this is Southern California.
Sure.
And with Mrs. Clinton today is her husband, President Bill Clinton. And that crowd goes wild because everybody loves Bill Clinton. And I said to my wife, I'm getting selfies with Hillary and Bill today. This goes back to this whole thing of, do you feel like you deserve? Do you feel like you deserve to get a selfie with Bill and Hillary? Yeah, at that point I did. I think he was my third presidential selfie. Prior to that, I got selfies with George H. No, he was my fourth president. He was my fifth presidential selfie at that point. Wow. My first one was George H.W. Bush, who I ran into when I was on a call, like at a client's restaurant at the Wynn Resort in Las Vegas. Okay. He just happened to be there. I get a picture with George Bush. My second one was Jimmy Carter. Okay.
Yeah.
My third one, I had this idea. I'm going to write a book about how Donald Trump is a great speaker and call it The Performance Secrets of Donald Trump. Like that book that was a New York Times bestseller about Steve Jobs, The Performance Secrets of Steve Jobs. And 3 weeks after I came up with the idea, I wrote the book in 2 days. I self-published it on Amazon. And 3 weeks after I came up with the idea, I did my first of 10 national and international TV appearances promoting that book and talking about Donald Trump's as a speaker. So that was my third selfie. My fourth selfie was at a fraternity party. Joe Biden's oldest son, the one who died of brain cancer, Biden, he was in my fraternity.
Okay.
And so we had a big fundraiser party at the Four Seasons. One of the fraternity brothers footed the whole bill because while I was driving a cab, all my fraternity brothers were becoming millionaires and billionaires on Wall Street, which only made it worse. This guy was the last partner made before the Goldman Sachs IPO. So he paid for this whole party. And the guest speaker that night was Joe Biden. And by that point, I had, you know, gotten out of taxi driving. I had started making money in the gourmet food industry. I wrote a book about what I learned at the Wharton Business School that helped me become successful as an entrepreneur once I stopped trying to be a movie star and a screenwriter. And I had promoted that book and made it a bestseller. And I had even, very close to this party, been interviewed by Brooke Shields on the Today Show. And Brooke Shields goes, Clint, you talk a lot about being comfortable outside of your comfort zone. And I said, yeah, life begins where your comfort zone ends. And she goes, oh, that sounds scary. And I said, when it's scary is when it's great. And I had never said that before. But here I am. I'm at this party. And I'm like 6 feet away from Joe Biden, and he's giving the speech. He was vice president at the time for Barack Obama. This was 2015. And I'm making a video of this whole speech, and he's talking extemporaneously about how his son, Bo, loved two things, being giving service in the United States Army and being a member of the Castle fraternity at the University of Pennsylvania with us. And everybody goes crazy. And when the speech was over, I was the only one who had the gumption or felt entitled enough to step forward and say to Joe Biden, "Could I get a quick selfie, sir?" And he goes, "Sure." So I get my selfie with Joe Biden, and I'll show you that picture too. And then they whisk him away and he's gone. So here's when they announce that there's going to be Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton at this commencement, I'm like looking for him and looking for him and looking for him. And finally, I spot him and I go and I make it happen. And here's my picture with Bill Clinton at the commencement.
Nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I was like so proud, and my wife was so proud, because she knows one of my favorite techniques for creating a positioning in the eyes of clients and prospects that you're somebody special is a technique called celebrity attachment. Here's me and Brooke Shields on the set of the Today Show. Mm-hmm. And that was like a couple months earlier. This technique is called celebrity attachment. When you meet a celebrity, if you get a photo with the celebrity, some of that luster, some of that star power attaches to you. It's just the way it works. We go to the opera to go see Tosca on New Year's Eve of 2017. And it's intermission, and I'm reading my program, and I look up from my program and I go, "Oh wow, there's Bill and Hillary." And there they are, just walking up the aisle. Where are they on New Year's Eve? They're at the opera. What with all the hoity-toities of New York City, right? Where else would they be? So my wife goes, "I'm going to get a selfie with both of them." And I'm like, "Yeah, you go, girl." I'm like really proud of her that she's got that ambition, because that's not an easy thing to accomplish. So she positions herself. They walk up the aisle and they go get a drink or whatever they do. And she positions herself in the aisle. And when they start heading back into the opera house, I text her, "Here they come." And as soon as they get to her, she goes, "Hey guys, can I get a quick selfie?" And there she is.
There they are. Yes.
Bill and Hillary. This is New Year's Eve at the Metropolitan Opera. Music tastes evolve. And here's the funny thing. If we were on the Newlywed Game, me and my wife, and they said, "Okay, for $10,000, what is your husband's favorite kind of music?" She knows the answer. It's any music I've never heard before. That's where I'm at today. That's why moving to Mexico, I turn on the radio, I've never heard any song. I'm in heaven all day long because every song I hear, I've never heard before. I just like new things. I'm a curious person. I like to hear new things.
As much as you guys loved Hawaii, why didn't you live there? Why didn't you move there?
That's the fascinating thing, because we loved going on vacations to Hawaii. Never once did we look at property in Hawaii. Never once.
Just not.
But never one time did we look at property in Hawaii. You know why it is, really? Because Hawaiians don't really like white Americans.
Okay.
They're racist against white Americans. They may be racist against anybody who's not a local. I don't know. They seem to like Asian tourists better than they like Americans, but maybe that's just my own bias. Okay. I don't know. But when we came to Mexico for the pandemic, what happened was I was on a 8-city speaking tour, and the last stop before it got canceled was Tony Robbins' 60th birthday party. I was the host of Tony Robbins' 60th birthday party. And after that party, we flew to, that was that night.
Yeah.
February 29th, 4 years ago, exactly. And after that night, we flew to Dallas for my next speaking event, and it got canceled. And every event got canceled because of the pandemic. And I said to my wife, "You want to fly back to New York City and be spending 2 weeks locked up in our apartment to flatten the curve? Or do you want to go to LA or Florida or Arizona? Or do you want to just go down to our favorite vacation resort, which we haven't been to in years because we thought it was too dangerous, Acapulco, Mexico. But since we're just going to be locked up in the room anyway, ordering room service for 2 weeks, what's the difference? This way we'll have a big suite, we'll have a pool, the room service is good and it's cheap. And that's what we did. We got on a plane and flew down to Acapulco. And then at that point, I had already started distrusting what the government was telling us, not really believing. At that point, I had heard Janet Yellen say, inflation is transitory. When she said inflation is transitory, I'm a Wharton Business School graduate. I see what's going on in the world. I could see inflation wasn't transitory. For them to be lying to us like that, I started distrusting what they were saying. And when we were in the hotel in Acapulco, I heard them say on CNN that the State Department advises all American citizens to return to the United States to shelter in place.
Yeah.
And when I heard them say that, that's when I rented a house in Acapulco for a month.
Yeah.
Because Acapulco is 80 degrees and sunny with 85 and sunny with 80% humidity every single day. And even though my apartment in New York City is a 5-minute walk from NYU Hospital, which is one of the best places to get treated for COVID, I actually know a person who went in with COVID and came out alive. I figured an ounce of prevention was better than a pound of cure. And sure. So we've got our first month in Acapulco, then we moved to a different house, then we moved to another house and we stayed in that one for 2 months. And after 4.5 months, we bought this place.
Nice.
Yeah.
You have had quite an adventure, Rick. Hi, Clint. It is amazing. I want to go back to going to such a good school. Where would the acting bug came from? What was that drive for you? And obviously, you're a great storyteller, wonderful entertainer. Is that part of it? Had you always had that kind of Kevin Pollak calls look at me syndrome, right? Like
I have it. I'm not okay. My problem was I didn't come from screwed up enough background.
Okay, there you go. Okay.
Like my friend in eighth grade, Robert Downey Jr. See, I was Tony in West Side Story in eighth grade, and Robert Downey Jr. played the lead in the musical Hair in eighth grade. Right. In our same school. So naturally we became friends. And he told me about his dad and how he would smoke pot with his dad since he was 6 years old. I didn't have that screwed up a childhood like him or the other kid in our school was John Cryer, who starred in 2.5 Men with Charlie Sheen for all those years. Right.
Right.
I don't know what happened to him, but the more screwed up you are, the bigger you become as a celebrity. I was only screwed up enough to be influenced by my high school creative writing teacher, Frank McCord, who wrote his memoir, Angela's Ashes, about his impoverished childhood in Ireland. He won the Pulitzer Prize for that. He became rich and famous around the world because of that book. It became a major motion picture, and he inspired all of us who took his creative writing class to want to be writers. I went out to Hollywood thinking I only wanted to be a writer, but then I went back to visit my parents and I thought, here I graduated from the best business school in the world. And I thought that was going to be enough to make me special. I thought that I was going to be special enough to keep my parents from arguing so much, because when I was growing up, they were always arguing. But I go home to visit them, and what happens on this trip? They get into the hugest argument of all time. My dad storms out of the house and slams the door behind him. He's gone into the night of New York City. And I turn to my mom. I'm sitting on the couch next to her. And I go, Mom, the way he resents you all these years, have you been cheating on Dad? And I'm thinking, holy cow, where did that question come from? I never even thought that question before. And I'm thinking, wow, what kind of a rude person asked that question to their mom?
Sure. Yeah.
And then I'm thinking, how come she ain't answering the question? He's not your real father. Your real father was a doctor at the fertility clinic we went to for 6 years trying to have you. And you look just like that guy. Say what? Now imagine how you would feel if everything you thought you knew about who you were.
Yeah.
Oof. So naturally,
how old were you at this time?
I was in my mid-20s. And that's when I said, screw it. If I'm going to go for Hollywood, I'm going to go all the way. I want to be a movie star. I want to be a producer, a writer, a director. I want to be the white Spike Lee. That's what I want to be.
Okay.
And that's when I really started going for it. I started taking acting lessons. And before long, I had maxed out all my credit cards. And my girlfriend was pregnant. And then we had a baby. And then I started driving a cab in 1995. And I drove a taxi all the way through 2000, through like past New Year's Eve of 2001. And then it came to be New Year's Eve on 2001. And that's when I said, 13 years is enough.
Yeah.
I can't keep throwing away my life on a dream that's never going to happen. Being a taxi driver while all my fraternity brothers are becoming millionaires and billionaires. I just can't keep doing it. And that's when I got out of cab driving and got into the gourmet food business. And I started taking personal development seminars. I did everything. I walked on fire with Tony Robbins. I did Toltec wisdom studies with Don Miguel Ruiz, who wrote The Four Agreements. I did men's power circles and ceremonies. I did everything you could possibly do to change. And sure enough, I started changing on the inside, and then my outer circumstances in my life began to change. And I met my wife shortly after that. And we've been together now for 23 years, and we've been married for more than 20 years. And we've been living in Mexico for 4 years, and here we are.
I think that's interesting in this way. You hear stories of people spending 10 years overnight success, right? The idea, never give up on your dreams, keep pursuing it. And I'm always curious, being that dedicated and that driven, but also when do you know, no, I'm now chasing a dream that isn't realistic and I need to put my energy into something else.
This is exactly why they had me on the Today Show.
Yeah.
They called it the push and pull of life.
Yeah.
And they never asked me the question as well as you just asked me the question.
Oh, see, that's very sweet of you to say, but thank you.
See, I also thought 10 years. See, baby's mama, we on our second date, we go out to a bar in West Hollywood called Dan Tana's. And we walk in the bar and she goes, oh, look, there's George Clooney. Let's go say hello. And I go, George Clooney? Yeah. We go over to George Clooney. Hey, George, how are you doing? Sarah, I am so effing wasted right now. He said the actual word, not effing, but yeah. I don't want to get anybody offended. So I put effing, but you know what he said.
Yes, yes.
And she goes, congratulations on ER, George. I always knew you were going to make it. And then the maitre d' comes over and he says, madam, your table is ready. And he seats us down there. And I turn to her and I ask the question that you and everybody is wondering, how do you know George Clooney? And I go, and she goes, oh, I used to represent him and his best friend at the same time. And I used to date him and his best friend at the same time. And stupid me, I got engaged to his best friend. Now, George Clooney, he always knew that he was going to be George Clooney. And I always knew that he was going to be George Clooney. Who didn't know he was going to be George Clooney? Hollywood didn't know. Because if you look at his IMDb resume of all the projects he's ever done, you'll see he got pilot after pilot. He was a series regular on series after series. And everything got canceled because Hollywood didn't have the vision. But he had the vision and he maintained that vision because it takes 10 years to make it in Hollywood. That's what she told me. So here I am, I'm driving a cab and it comes to be, I go to dinner with my dad in New York City. I'm a Wharton Business School graduate. I've been driving a cab for 4 years. He takes me out for a steak dinner in New York City on Park Avenue South to a great restaurant called Maxie's on Park Avenue South. It's no longer there, surprises me. And we sit down to dinner, and who do we see walking, sauntering across the dining room? My dad's best friend. And he goes, ah, look who it is, the Wharton taxi driver. And my dad was like, And at the end, and the guy's making fun of me. And at the end of the dinner, he walks away. My dad picks up the check and my dad turns to me and he goes, how much longer are you going to keep throwing away your life like this? And I go, Dad, it's been 9 years. One more year and I'm going to break through. He goes, come on. I go, Dad, just 10 years to make it in Hollywood. One more year and I'm going to make it. He goes, look, I'm your father. Who the hell else is going to say anything like this to you? It's true. Nobody cares about you. Nobody cares about you enough to say anything. Nobody said anything to me in all those years except my dad, the guy who raised me, the guy who stormed out of the house. He cared about me because he was my father. He raised me. So 9 years goes by. I'm driving my cab. 10 years go by. Man, any day now, 10 years. Comes to be 11 years. Man, I'm overdue.
Yeah.
Comes to be 12 years. Man, I am seriously overdue. I wrote 30 screenplays. Okay? Some of them were fantastic. I had producers say to me, you are going to be the star of my next movie. And you know what? I never heard from the guy again. After 12 years of being overdue, finally the 13th year came by and I made $513 driving a taxi on New Year's Eve of the millennium. And that's when I said, I just can't keep doing this. I really have given it the good college try, 13 right. years. When they say 10 and I went 13, and I'm the person who had succeeded at everything, but I couldn't get arrested in Hollywood except for the DUI. And that was no fun. So how do you know when to quit? I think you quit when you feel like you've given it enough of a try. And then look, then my wife and I, we got married. I started making money. I just wanted to make money and be fat and happy. And I got seriously fat. I was 236 pounds, seriously obese. And I didn't even realize it. And I made it like I.
By the way, what gourmet food did you, were you?
I am the founder, president, and owner and executive chef of the 5-Star Butter Company. Okay. And I provide the best butter on earth to the top chefs and restaurants in America.
Okay. So you're fat and happy. Literally. Per se. Yes.
Yeah. And I got into a men's, like in October of 2008, the world was melting down and I got terrified. So I go to a men's self-help team. And that, what does that look like? That's 18 naked guys dancing around a campfire. Yeah. I'm one of them. And on the other side of the crackling yellow and orange flames, I see the shaman pointing at me. You don't know it yet, but you're already dead. What are you talking about, man? 8 years ago, I was driving a cab. Now I'm a millionaire. I was living on a little boat. Now I live in a mansion. You're already dead. You just don't know it. And I didn't know what the hell the guy was talking about, but I couldn't get it out of my mind. For months, I'd wake up out of sound sleep. I'm already dead. What does he mean?
Yeah.
And then it came to be New Year's Day of 2009. And I asked myself a question inspired by the shaman. I said, I don't know what it means to be already dead. I think I'm alive. But what if he is right? Or what if I'm going to die at the end of this year? If this was going to be the last year of my life, what would I want to accomplish? And the crazy thing was, I hadn't written a word since I said, that's it. I'm done with Hollywood. I'm never going to write again. I took 8 years off from writing. Did not write a word. And the first thing I wrote down on my list of accomplishments from the last year of my life was I got to write my book about what I learned at the Wharton Business School that helped me to become successful as a businessman once I stopped trying to be a movie star and a screenwriter. And that book was called What They Teach You at the Wharton Business School. That became my first best-selling book. That also got me into this whole thing about how I self-published that book on Amazon. And I waited for the sales to roll in because I thought a book about what they teach you at the best business school in the world would just fly like hotcakes. I sold 8 copies of that book the first year. And so I go to a seminar about how do you sell books? And I ask Jack Canfield, how do you sell half a billion chicken soup for the soul books? And he goes, Clint, you got to become famous because people don't buy books from nobodies. They only buy books from people who are somebody. So I started going on TV and it costs a lot of money to hire a publicist. And my wife is like, why do you keep paying this lady all that money? Why don't you just book yourself on TV? And I had to figure that out. But I did, after 9.5 weeks of cold calling TV stations all across the country, I booked myself on my first show myself. And I did that for free. And that year I booked 7 TV appearances myself. And my second year I booked another 20 TV appearances. And people started asking me, how do you book yourself on TV? So I started teaching people, how do you book yourself on TV? And that got me into what I've been doing now for 12 plus years, which is helping people. They come to my celebrity launch pad to learn how to book yourself on TV, where I guarantee you're going to book yourself on at least 3 TV appearances, or you get all your money back plus $1,000. We've done 57 of those celebrity launch pads. My students have booked more than 6,547 TV appearances that I'm aware of so far. But I also invented these other methodologies of being somebody special in the eyes of clients and prospects, and getting the photos with celebrities. Celebrity attachments is my favorite way, but there's also speaking at very important places. I've had the great privilege to share my message now all over the world, at Harvard, Oxford, Cambridge, London Stock Exchange, NASDAQ, the Philadelphia College of Physicians, the Royal Society of Medicine, Coca-Cola, Mercedes-Benz, Porsche, Microsoft, West Point, even Carnegie Hall. And when I've had a lot of best-selling books, including What They Teach You at the Wharton Business School, and my most recent book, Wisdom of the Men, which is my memoir, which really reveals all my secrets about how I went from being a taxi driver to working with international superstars like Dr. Oz and Martha Stewart and Oprah and Suzanne Somers and the 5 presidents of the United States, revealing all of my secrets so anybody can do it too. Because I think ultimately it is about the experiences of your life. Like you sneak into the No Nukes concert and it changes. You just getting my ticket snatched and sneaking into The Who changed me as a person. And then sneaking into No Nukes changed me, but then getting into the Wharton Business School changed me. And then speaking at Harvard Faculty Club for an event sponsored by the entrepreneurship students of Harvard Business School, that changed me. All of these things that you do, meeting all these celebrities and presidents, these moments of your life change who you are. And ultimately, I started out wanting to be special enough to change my parents and behavior. But what I ultimately have come to understand is that all this stuff is about how you feel about yourself. All this stuff is about who you become. I have this amazing house here in Mexico. It's enormous. And it's in the best neighborhood in Mexico. And I have 16 people coming for my seminar. They're all going to be staying here at the villa for impact, influence, and income. They start arriving tomorrow. But it's not the mansions or the cars or the money or the trips around the world. It's what all of that stuff does to you and who you become. I went to Hollywood to find out who am I. And all of this stuff that I've been doing has built a new me. And it has built a me that is unique and has created in me an understanding of who I am in a way that nobody else has and that I never expected, but I really appreciate and I'm really grateful for the ups, the downs, hanging out with Mick Jagger and also driving a cab. I'm grateful for every single bit of it.
One of my favorite Bruce songs is a song called Better Days. And
Better Days, yep.
And he talks about sitting around waiting for my life to begin while it's all just slipping away.
Yeah, the way I felt. That's the way I felt for a long time behind the wheel of yellow cab number 6087.
Yeah. And people will joke, what could you do a 15-minute talk on without any preparation? And that would, with those lyrics, I could talk about. I think too many people say, when I get the kid out of diapers, then I'm going to enjoy being a parent. When I get that raise, then I'm going to be able to enjoy. When I'm out of college, I'm going to be able to do that. And in 2017, I was diagnosed with colon cancer. I'm fine now. I always like to throw that in there. But say I enjoyed having colon cancer, but I appreciated the fact that I had been diagnosed. I was going through this. I was going through chemo. I was listening to music and keeping me update, right? I just, even when life is hard, these are better days, right? Because this is what makes me who I am. There's a singer, Sarah Hickman, said, "My mistakes brought me to this place." And I think that's what I get out of your message in a great deal.
Thank you. I heard that it's the imperfections in a person that make a person beautiful.
Yeah.
Certainly unique. The scars are what educate us. And if you had told me when I was driving the cab, like 1998, 97, and every night I'm going back to the boat with no heat and no electricity and reading my copy of Frank McCourt's Angela's Ashes by flashlight for inspiration and listening to Jewel on my boombox, because these are people who made it. And if they could make it, I could make it. And if you had told me a couple of years later, I'd be giving up. I never would have believed it. All of this makes me who I am. And I never would have gotten to do all the things that I do now and to be who I am now and to have had these experiences if it wasn't for all of that. And I certainly wouldn't appreciate it as much. Yep.
This might be a tough one for you, but what haven't you done that you want to do? What's next for you? What is the creative thing that I don't see you've written a novel. I don't know. What's next for you? What do you want to do creatively that you haven't had a chance to do yet?
I just wrote a fiction novel.
Oh, really?
I just wrote a fiction novel and I just need to add the ending. I know what the ending is. I just haven't written it yet. I know what it is. I have a whole novel all set to go. It's called More. It's about love, sex, war, and money. And what it's really about is inflation, because I believe that we are about to be really in some serious inflationary trouble. The whole planet. But what have I done that I...
What haven't you done yet?
What haven't I done that I would like to do? There's a few people that I'd like to get to know, that I'd like to get to know better. Like I'd like to write the book. Like I'd like to write Kevin Hart has written some great books. I'd like to produce Kevin Hart's seminars. Kevin Hart, the comedian, he's got these books about, he's like getting into being a coach for people who want to improve their lives. I would like to produce his seminars. I could do that so great because I know this whole seminar business inside and out, nobody's business. And I would love to do those seminars with Kevin Hart. I would like to write the book about Donald Trump's actual inside story about what really happened. And what's really happening and what really happened. I think he's a fascinating person, regardless of how you may feel about his politics. He's had a unique experience. And as a person who grew up in New York City, he was always larger than life. He reshaped the skyline of that city. So I have a different perspective on him than I think a lot of people do. I'd love to write his book just so that I could hear what really happened and learn from him. I'm a person who loves to learn, man. And I want to learn from people who are more successful than me. I would say those are the two things. If they were on my, and I'd also like to do something with Kanye. I think Kanye is just a genius. And I would like to do something with him where, like, for me, writing books is really easy. And producing seminars is really easy. Designing and producing the whole product suites for information marketers is really easy. And I do that a lot. And I've made mucho dinero doing that. So I think that's the kind of thing I would like to do, those types of projects.
Okay. Very interesting. All right. This has been great. I feel like we could just keep talking forever. But I end every podcast with the Mary question. Don't know if you did your homework and listen to Thunder Road.
I've listened to that song a million times.
Okay. If you are a fan...
I've listened to that album a thousand times.
If you are a fan of Clint's and you're checking the podcast, thank you very much. He made you all proud. Jay Armstrong was an honors English teacher that's now retired. But when he was teaching, he would give his students the lyrics to Thunder Road, and they would read it as if it was a poem, discussing the imagery that Bruce uses, the word choices, comparing it to like poems from Robert Frost. And then he was asked his class at the end of the day, does Mary get in the car? So Clint, that is your question. Does Mary get in the car at the end of Thunder Road?
Wow. I don't think Mary gets in the car because Bruce is the guy who is always talking about the people who don't win. His music is about the unsung heroes who don't get the glory. So no, Mary doesn't get in the car. I don't think so. And also in a Hollywood movie, they get married and live happily ever after. But Bruce Springsteen doesn't make Hollywood movies. Bruce Springsteen sings for the steel workers. And those guys, they lose the girl every time. They go home with a bottle of Jack Daniels and a six pack of Budweiser. They don't go home with the girl.
Very nice. If someone wants to reach you and get more information, how can they?
Go to Clint.com, Clint with three T's.com. Why three T's, Clint? Because one of my clients was the inventor of the science of nameology, which is what does your name really mean? And she said to me, Clint, I wish you could add an extra T to the end of your name because the T's always end up on top, like Trump. And I said, wow, that's interesting. And I looked to see if I could get Clint with two T's.com, but that wasn't available. But I did get Clint with three T's.com. So if you go there, you will find a bunch of stuff about me. And that's the easiest way to remember how to find Clint with three T's.com.
I love it. Any final thoughts?
Hey, man, I really had a lot of fun. Great, interesting podcast. I told you it was going to be a different take than what you would normally get.
I love it. It's been great. Yeah. I love it. Sounds good. All right, go. Clint with three T's. Check it out. Tell him you heard about him on Set Lessing Bruce. Clint, continued success. I am so happy for you. And I'm so glad you spent some time with me today. This was a joy. Listeners, remember, be safe, be kind, and we'll talk to you soon. Goodbye. Thank you for checking out this episode. If you enjoyed our discussion, I hope you will check out other episodes of the podcast. I've spent over 7 years talking to hundreds of music fans from around the world about the power and magic of music. Please follow me on all my socials. I'm still on Twitter, aka X, as Jesse Jackson DFW. The show is at Set Lusting Bruce. The show and I are both on Facebook as well. I'm a part of a few other podcasts. On Perfectly Good Podcast, me and my co-host Sylvan are talking about every John Hyatt song in alphabetical order. I am part of a few other podcasts. On Perfectly Good Podcast, me and my co-host Sylvan are talking about every John Hyatt song in alphabetical order. Both Perfectly Good Podcast and Set List and Bruce are part of the Pantheon Podcast Network, where there are dozens of great podcasts about music. Charles and I talk all things Doctor Who on Next Stop Everywhere. I'm joined each week by Lou and Karen on Last Best Hope for Conversation as we discuss Babylon 5 and other pop culture topics. This show can be reached at setlustingbruce@gmail.com. And I would mean the world to me if you could send me feedback on any of the podcasts. Or please reach out to schedule time for you to join me on a future episode. Getting to talk to people about their love of music and their favorite musicians and other creative endeavors is a passion of mine, and I hope that the conversations bring you a little joy, a little love, and a whole lot of light.